using technology wisely. The scriptures, when it talks about this, it gives us several directions that it wants us to go in, to look into. It's going to start off in Genesis, then it's going to talk about Exodus, and we're going to go into Paul's writings in Corinthians. But I also want to read a section of Revelation that I found that was interesting too, when we're talking about technology, because we've all read these scriptures and we've all pondered them in our mind. If you can imagine people reading some of the scriptures, 500-600 years ago, before there was what we consider real technological changes, you would imagine how marveled they would be at what they were reading, especially in the book of Revelation and John's Revelation. But in the book of Genesis, starting off in the 11th chapter, the writers of this lesson decided to talk about the Tower of Babel as a movement of technology, a technology advancing on a young earthly humanity. This is the time when the flood has already occurred. God has preserved Noah and his family. And when the ark came to rest and the waters receded, and they came out to worship the Lord, God gave them a command. He gave Noah and his three sons a command, that the same command that he gave Adam and Eve, pretty much, is, I want you to multiply and fill the earth. Multiply and fill the earth, because God had wiped out all living things upon the earth at the time through the flood, and out of Noah and his sons and their families, he wanted them to multiply and fill the earth that he had created. So, as the chapters roll on, we get into the 11th chapter of Genesis, and it's talking about hundreds of years later, as the earth is starting to be repopulated, and there are multitudes of people there, we get into the Tower of Babel story. And we want to talk about this, because talking about technology. And it says, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Everyone spoke the same thing, as you can imagine. And they said to one another, go to, or let's go, come, let us make brick. There's our technological advancement. Everything was made out of stone or brush or something of that nature. And before, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. They've known how to construct brick now. Brick, I've had to look this up. It's a type of clay residue that is packed in a mold and baked, and it becomes, you know what bricks are. So it's out of a clay substance. So where they decided that they wanted to live was in a fertile valley, apparently with lots of clay, and their technology had gotten to the point where, let's quit rolling these big stones out of the mountains, let's make our own brick and build things out of brick. So let's make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. They realized that there is a substance that they can put in the joints of these bricks and they'll stick together. Technological advancement. Great. It sounds wonderful. No more stone huts to live in. No more houses made out of tree branches and things. Now we've got brick and mortar. So what does the technologically advanced do when they say that we've got this? And they said, and this is where God had an issue with them. Go to, or let's go, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Well, wait a minute, I thought that's what God commanded them to do. God had told Noah and his sons, I want you to reproduce and repopulate the earth, but you have to scatter to do it. God didn't want them all to stay clanned up in one group. He wanted them to scatter and fill the earth with humanity so that they could have true dominion over the whole earth, which was the whole purpose of God creating man, is so that we could have fellowship with him and have dominion and care for his earth. So he's telling Noah and his sons that, and here's the very thing, this act of rebellion saying, let's do this or else we're going to be scattered. Let's build us a city so that we won't be scattered. We're better collective, we're better as a people, we're better together under one leadership. Let's don't be scattered where we don't know if, you know, we can take care of one of ourselves or ourselves. But when we do this, let's build us a city. We can fortify it with these bricks, and we can build a tower whose top may reach into heaven so that we can make us a name. There's pride in this thing. We want to show everything. We want to build us something, and supposedly they're the only people on the earth at the time, but they want to show future generations what they did. Look at us. This was the start. We were your forefathers. Look at the tower that's going to reach up into the heavens. Now, for ages, I always heard that this tower, well, they were trying to build into heaven. And when you look at it, the actual brick itself would not allow them to build a very tall tower. It would collapse upon itself, the weight of it. So this tower, and you know, I've heard several, and even commentaries will say and stress that the two things that they believe this tower was to be was they wanted to do as Satan wanted to do, ascend into heaven. So it was man's attempt to gain access to God through building a tower so high that it would reach into the heavens. But they had to know that anything they could build would never be even higher than the mountains around them. So it may not have been that. And there's also statements that they wanted to build a tower so high that in case of another flood comes, they would have a place to hide or to be safe from an oncoming flood. Well, the flood that they had heard about through their ancestors covered the mountains. So here again, it doesn't make a lot of sense to build not only a tower that cannot get above the flood waters of the past, but also they built in the bottom right at the Dead Sea level in a fertile valley in Babylonia. So instead of building a tower on top of a mountain, they built at the lowest point they could. So this was more, the commentaries believe this was more of an effort to make a name for themselves and to show their pride. We're going to have this tower where for generations to come, people will know us. It'll be a place where we can observe everything around us. It'll be for defense purposes. And they believe that we were already getting into idolatry here, where possible sacrifices, religious observances were being taken place on this tower unto the gods of the heavens. And, of course, this was a total blasphemous act, not only because they were worshiping idol and paganistic gods, but throwing it in God's face to do that. They also believe that this tower was meant to observe the heavens. People have been fascinated by the stars and the moon and the sun ever since man is created, and this was an attempt to worship that, to observe that, because out of this observations came a lot of their belief systems. So we don't fully know, but we do know that man, through technology, said, well, let's do this. We know we can stack these bricks together, and we can go as high as we need to go to make a name for ourselves. When I looked at this and I realized, well, what is the Lord going to do about this? We know what their design is, what their desire is. And the Lord said this. He says, behold, the people is one collectively. Now, he's making that statement, obviously, to the Trinity, just as if he said, when he was saying, let us make man, he's speaking to someone with him. We believe, obviously, this is Jesus, his Son, and the Holy Spirit. Let us make man in our image. He is speaking to that same Trinity here as he's looking down upon man and what they have done. The people are one. They have collected themselves together in total rebellion of what I've told them to do. That was the first thing he noticed. And they all have one language, and this they begin to do. With that same language, they can command each other. They can formulate. They can create technological advancements because they're talking with one another. I found you could do this if you mix this and that together. One language, being able to communicate, was the key for these people to stay together and to advance technologically. And God said, now nothing will be restrained from them because of these factors. They've unified, they're under one language, and they're using that to where nothing can be restraining them, which they have imagined to do. Whatever their imagination can come up with, they will find the elements and the abilities to do this. This is God's analysis of what people he is saying. So he says, go to, or let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. He didn't say, let us go down and destroy the temple or the tower. That's what we would expect. If this was something that God was upset about, come down and destroy the tower right in front of them. It doesn't. There's records that the Greek historian Herodotus, which was about 1,000 years before Christ, put in his writings that he saw remnants of the Tower of Babel, that it was the ruins of it that were still there during his day. We don't know that for a fact. That's just what a historian put down. But we do know, if it is true, that God didn't come down to destroy the tower. He didn't destroy the brick. The brick was the technological advancement. Building a tower wasn't a technological advancement. He didn't come down and destroy the technology. He destroyed the motive behind what they were doing. He says they are together now, and their motives are that they're going to build this tower to do that thing which is evil, and therefore I've got to separate these, which was the very purpose of what I wanted to do from the beginning, because if I get them all together, they're easily led by one person or a group of people. They'll all follow that group, and that one person, that one group can persuade them not to follow me. He's wanting them to disperse, so what better way to do it than to confound their language? When they can't communicate, you can't do anything when you can't communicate. If you've ever traveled to a foreign land and tried to get around and do things with someone who cannot understand what you're saying, it's very frustrating. And you can imagine these people, when God comes down, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. They quit building the city because they couldn't communicate. God's purpose was to scatter them. And he did so by breaking up their communication skills, their languages, changing their languages where they would have to clan up together with those that had similar languages, and they would go off into a different part of the earth and start their own lives together in their own language. Here again, what is it that God saw? He saw that their minds together, nothing will restrain them. God created our brains. I don't believe that God wants us still to live in grass huts or stone huts or out in the elements. I don't think God is against technology because, you know, when you look at man now, I mean, this was the beginning of man and building a tower that was probably only 5 or 6 stories tall or a little higher. You know, I did a little bit of digging, and it said the tallest solid brick structure that they know out there is in Montana. It's a smokestack to an mining industry. It's 500 feet tall of just bricks stacked on top of each other. That's pretty tall when you think about it. 500 feet's a long ways up there if you just got bricks stacked on each other. But here again, if you look at the pyramids of Egypt, 2,600 years before Christ, 480 feet tall. The tallest skyscraper, the very first skyscraper in the world, was in Chicago in 1885. It's called the Home Insurance Building. It was 138 feet tall. Doesn't seem like a whole lot, does it? Because the Empire State Building would come along later on and build it 1,250 feet tall. The mankind couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that anybody would build a structure 1,200 feet in the air. It's unbelievable. Until they passed it. Now, the Empire State Building's not even in the top 20. Man has surpassed it. Now, the tallest building in the world is in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates. They call it the Burj Khalifa, and it's 2,700 feet in the air, half a mile. Half a mile in the air. Structure, single structure. Now, of course, it's shaped like a sphere, like a pencil. And, you know, just so it can survive, but it's unbelievable. 2,700 feet when the tallest first skyscraper was 138 feet. Man's technology, the invention of steel and things of this nature, allows man to technologically advance to levels that we can't even believe. We can't even comprehend that man can do this. Now, is God angry with mankind for building skyscrapers? No, the purpose of building skyscrapers is so you can have plenty of office space and population. People, you know, I've often wondered, or people have asked, you know, if God, when his creative powers, why did he create everything so primitive? You know, he just created the garden and the earth. And he created the whole earth and all the process. But when it came down to mankind, he didn't even give him clothes to wear. He put a garden out there and set them in the middle of the garden and said, sustain the garden. Why didn't he build them a city to live in? You know, if God wanted, you know, God had all these technological advances. But when you look at it, what in the world would Adam and Eve do with a city? They didn't need a city. They were there basically living with God in a garden with all their needs met. God created everything that would sustain Adam and Eve right there around them. Everything they needed for them to live their life and have a relationship with him, not to distract them, from him, but every day they had sustenance. They had food, they had shelter, they had water, and they had him. All right? Now, does that mean we're to go back to those days and not have modern advances? I hope not. I don't think so. We certainly wouldn't want to live like our great-grandparents lived anymore. I don't know if anybody would want to go back there to outhouses and all these things. Nobody wants to do that. Advance and technologies are wonderful things. But what does it do to us, and how can we utilize it? Do we utilize it to make our life easier and better? That's fine. But we also want to use it to help benefit our relationship with God and not to distract us from our relationship with God. And I think that's what these people were doing at the Tower of Babel, is that they were making a city that they were totally sustaining themselves, leaving God out of everything, and even getting to a point where they were going to worship paganistic gods because of what, you know, what they could see and what they were feeling so prideful about themselves, that God needed to separate them. He told Israel, I don't want you to intermarry, and I don't want you to be a part of one big world group of people. I want you separate, because I'm going to groom you to have a relationship with me so that out of you will come the Messiah. I needed you to be separate, Israel. He tells the church, come out of it. You know, you can't be a part of the world. You got to be separate. You're a peculiar people, he tells the church. Can we have modern conveniences? Absolutely. But what do we do with it? We are not to be a part of a group or whatever that distracts our lives away from God, or get so technologically advanced that we no longer see a need for God, or technology can take the place of God. What do we need God for? Look at all the advances in medicine. My grandmother, if I heard her once, I heard her 100 times stand up and she says, we didn't have any money, we didn't have any goods, we didn't have any doctors, but we had God. She would say that, and now we're in danger at times of saying, well, we've got medicine, we've got money, we've got all these, why do we need God? That's the deceit of Satan with technology. Why do we need him if you've got everything at your disposal? So with that, I want to talk about a little bit of advancement in technology, because when we're talking about today, the first thing that pops up, I mean, obviously, with all our home goods and appliances and everything that's smart and everything can do itself, and you know, it's amazing what technology can do. But what will happen in the future? I was studying the technological advances in science and medicine and IT, information technology, engineering, where the buildings and things that we can build are incredible. You know, in 1977, we sent 2 rockets called Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 out into space. And the scientists at that time knew that they would go out for years. Did you know in 1977 they sent these Voyagers out to go through space and observe and send back through radio waves pictures and photos of what they said? Do you know those things are still going? They're still out there. They're 4 billion miles away. They've exited what our planets are, and they've gone completely out, and they're still sending back radio waves. These things are almost 46 years in the space, traveling at 38,000 miles per hour, and still technology is incredible. What with advances we've made. Think of medicine and all the, you have a pill for everything now, and you've got, you know, technology has helped medicine where we can, people that used to die of some of the most simplest things and now can be taken care of overnight. Wonderful advancements in medicine and engineering. When you get to computers and IT, the one thing that scares a lot of us is what we call artificial intelligence, which we have heard about for years now, and it's here in its elementary stage. But we think, well, what in the world should we worry about if anything in technology? What is artificial intelligence? So I looked up a definition of it, and it's basically the attempt to create computers and machines to mimic the problem-solving and decision-making capabilities of the human mind. The idea of artificial intelligence is to build computers and machines to think. Up to now, they reacted upon commands. If you want information, you ask for information, they have information, they tell it what the information is. But artificial intelligence says we're going to create machines that can think for themselves. Given all the information that it knows, can we get to this point where it actually thinks? You can think of the autonomous cars now, the driverless cars that they're trying to sell, where if you can imagine yourself traveling, let's say our biggest city in Charlotte, and you know one way downtown, and you go downtown, and there's a wreck there, and you don't know your way anywhere else. Now, of course, you can pull out your smartphone and Google Map it and find your way out, but an autonomous car, you can sit in the back seat, and it knows every street in the whole city. And it doesn't need commands. It just automatically diverts itself and goes around the wreck, gets you back in line to where you never had to ask it. You never had to do anything. All it knew is it needed you needed to get to this point by this time, and it's going to take you there because it knows and it's thinking. It's reasoning things out. There's an obstacle here, and I'm going to take you a different route. Stuff that we would have to really stretch our minds on. Some people, I always think that the Alexa in your home place that is so fun to be around. You know, you can call out Alexa, what's the temperature outside, and it'll tell you. Alexa, play my favorite song, Whatchamadoodle, and they'll play it. It's amazing what Alexa there can do. It's a computer that is taking commands and regurgitating the answers. Alexa, how do you bake a cake? Well, here's how you bake a cake. It's pulling information out of its system and saying, here's how you bake a cake. It's a wonderful piece of technology. So I started reading on Alexa. What's the next stage of Alexa? So what they're telling us is that their hope is that Alexa will, in the next stage, in artificial intelligence, will be able to have a conversation with you. Not take just commands, but will be able to direct a conversation, give you answers, and detect your mood and be able to either help you or lead you into, if you're depressed, Alexa will pick up on that by the tone of your voice or the tears in your eye or whatever, and she will be able to do something to redirect your bad mood or your sad mood. They anticipate a time where a family of four can schedule Alexa, say, Alexa, every night at 9 o'clock, I want you to sound an announcement in the house that it's time for bed for the kids. I want you to dim the lights upstairs, turn on the bedroom fan, the ceiling fans, and turn the porch light on every night at 9 o'clock, and she'll do it. She'll do it every night. You won't have to worry about anything. You never have to get out of off your couch. She'll take care of everything. This is artificial intelligence learning how to think. It even said, and this was a very bizarre part, even says that they are anticipating, because artificial intelligence machines and computers are not trained to have feelings, they're not trained to empathize or to sympathize or to have biases, that they are actually contemplating the time where they will be your judges sitting on a bench. Because as the lawyers are debating the sides, a judge where now he or she has to take in all the information and make a determination, what is the guilt or the non-guilt, and what is the sentencing? There may be a time when you have artificial intelligence that can take in all the information without feelings, opinions, biases, and render a judgment on a certain matter, all based on knowledge and and its ability to think for itself. Now, some of that sounds great to some. It scares the death out of the rest of us, when we think about the capabilities of what AI can do. So what are we to do with it? Are we to reject it? Are we to run from it? Not necessarily. I think we have to understand, what is this going to do into our relationship with God, and how is it going to impact us? How is it going to affect us? One of them even says that in the conversation part of it, think of all the widows and widowers who are alone. And loneliness and depression can set in. To have an artificial intelligent computer that can carry on a conversation, can sing with you, can talk with you, can answer questions, can give you advice, it'd be like having a companion right there in your home. It's amazing. So when I go to the book of Revelation, for hundreds of years, people have read the book of Revelation, obviously for thousands of years, and they have thought, boy, what a time this will be. But in the 13th chapter of Revelation, it says this, and this is John talking about the Antichrist. He says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." If I skip down, it says, "I saw one of his heads as if it were wounded to death. This beast, this Antichrist, is going to be killed. A wound that is mortal. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. They saw it. They witnessed it. The wound that was to destroy the Antichrist, the beast, was healed for all of them to see, and they marveled at this. Incredible situation. So much so that in verse 4, they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? If I turn to the page, and it says, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. This is the false prophet. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. He's going to tell the whole world how to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. He creates an image that's going to come to life. And the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. To have the ability to know who's worshiping the beast, who's not. To have the ability to know who is trying to buy and sell goods without the mark of the beast and who's not. These are the things that artificial intelligence, or that things that technology, I should say, I don't want to blame it all on that, but what technology will be able to do. If we're now seeing the advancements that we're seeing in this day and time, and they're advancing at a rapid pace, the things that we used to read about in Revelation and just marvel at them, well, this is incredible. I mean, you're talking about billions of people on the earth, and someone can know whatever one of them is doing, and who's worshiping and who's not worshiping. We can start seeing the seeds of technology that can do that. There's databases that can have enough space, store space, to have every individual person on the earth in their database, to know everything about that person. That's where we are today. Now, are we to have a lesson like this to scare us out of our boots, to say, you know, what are we going to do? Should we run from it? Should we do like some people like to do and just isolate themselves totally? You know, the Amish still, they live completely primitive. They don't want to get caught up in technology at all because of what they consider to be damage to their relationship with their culture, their homes, and their God. Should we do the same thing? Not necessarily. The point of this lesson is not to be caught in a deceptive pattern of Satan in how he uses technology evilly. The evil use of technology is what we want to be aware of, even as it approaches inside of our own home. How do we allow technology to infiltrate our home to a point that may be distractive, or to a point where it hinders our ability to serve God in the privacy of our own home? This lesson is for all of us to learn and to realize that God didn't destroy the brick. He didn't destroy the tower. He scattered the people because of their motive and what they were intending to do with technology. They were leaving him. They were pushing him out to build their city and their tower to make a name for themselves. If we do that with technology, our fate will be similar. We are supposed to say, as technology comes upon, if it makes our life easier, if medicine makes us live longer, those are all wonderful things, but it should never take the place of our relationship with God. If it does, then that's the evil use of technology. Be aware of it. As you advance with technology, be aware of what it's doing and where it's taking you. And at that point, we'll be in line with God, because I no longer worry about the book of Revelation. I know it's now possible and that it's going to happen. I can see it in the future, and I'm thrilled that God has created all of this technology to a point where his Bible, which some people could look at me and say, this is foolish, this is crazy, it would never happen. Now we know it can happen, it will happen, because mankind, the creativity of God, has allowed them to do good and evil, and the evil will come out because God has already told us what is going to happen. With that, we take joy that God is in control of all things. Let technology come on. God's in control of it all, and we will worship him through it all. Next week, we'll start off with the book of Matthew, getting into the winter quarter. It's a good time to talk about Matthew, the Christmas season, so we'll look forward to you then. See you.